Now on module four, what we're going to move on to is looking at how we plan and manage your clients. And when I talk about clients, what we're really talking about particularly is Office 365 Pro Plus. And of course, don't forget, we've also got Office Online, which used to be called Office Web Apps. What we're going to cover in this module is planning for Office clients. Not surprisingly, there's quite a bit of planning that needs to be done there. Then we'll look at the various sort of client deployments. First of all, starting by looking at user-driven client deployments, where the users are connecting to the download location for Office 365, and then they're installing from there. The next thing is we'll then look at the IT-driven deployments of Office 365. So that's using tools such as System Center Configuration Manager, group policies, and logon batch files. And then we'll finish off with a module on Office telemetry and reporting, if that's of interest to you. So in our planning for Office clients, what we're going to look at is, do a quick introduction and recap on what the different clients are. We'll talk about how we plan for those deployments, and then we're going to go through Office 365 Pro Plus, this Office On Demand, and Office Online, looking at the technologies behind some of those, particularly the click-to-run technology. I'll then cover the Office 365 licensing and activation issues and about how the activation service connects to Office 365. And then we'll look at some more stuff on the deployment of Office 365 as an administrator-led deployment, and then some best practices to finish off with. So as an introduction to Office 365, what have we got? Well, we've got Office 365 Pro Plus, which is a subscription licensed version of Office. Okay, it is not a web-based version of Office, and it's important to make that distinction. What I say, it's subscription licensed, and it's also licensed on a per device basis. So if you have one user license to Office 365 Pro Plus, you can install that software on up to 5 separate devices. And most of us don't have more than 5 devices, I hope. And in consequence, if you then want to install it on a 6th device, you have to uninstall it from one of your previous 5 devices. We've also got clients for SharePoint Designer. SharePoint Designer is a add-in download that's available to enable you to configure your SharePoint pages, particularly your SharePoint public site, make it look pretty and all sorts of good stuff like that. And then we have clients for Visio and Project, as I mentioned in module one. Office On Demand, this is the sort of application virtualized version of Office that you can run on pretty well any sort of Windows machine alongside other installations of Office 365, and even regardless of what, you don't require administrator rights or anything. It's very effective, and so Martin will be demonstrating that, as well as demonstrating our Office Online apps as well, which are what you probably may have known as Office Web Apps. That's what they're previously called, but now called Office Online. Right, so thinking about some planning then. There are a number of planning factors, as I'm sure you can imagine. Main point about Office 365 is to understand that with this new click-to-run technology, what it enables you to do is to run a version of Office alongside whatever version of Office you've currently got installed. And it runs in its own little virtual machine. It actually uses its AppV, isn't it, Martin?
Yes. Yeah. It uses a new version of AppV to isolate Office in that environment so that you can have, like you say, multiple versions of Office on your machine. And maybe you have a compatibility issue with adding into Excel that doesn't work on Excel 2013, so you can run both versions of Excel on your machine.
And the other thing it does is that it stores all its files in your local user profile as well. So when you, as a user, then log off, all of those files and settings, they actually disappear, so that there's no footprint left on the machine whatsoever. It's just a local footprint. We've got lots of support for customization within Office, not surprisingly. There's lots of different things. I mean, that's a bit beyond the scope of this course. But if you've got Office devs on course, Office developers, then what you can do is that you can take Office and customize it further. Be aware, though, there is a there is a compatibility problem, isn't there? 32-bit and 64-bit versions. What's your experience have you much experience with using the 64-bit version?
Yes, so I use the 64-bit version all the time because I use very large spreadsheets, so I need to use that. But when you use the 64-bit versions of Office, there is compatibility errors with certain DLLs that only work with the 32-bit version and so on. So you have to be aware of those and make sure that your DLLs works in the 64-bit environment.
Yeah, so I think if you've got any sort of Visual Basic and ActiveX controls, those are things you need to watch out for in terms of planning your client support. When you're looking at planning for Outlook, well, shouldn't be too many issues. As I've mentioned about this 32-bit, 64-bit possible conflict there. If you have got sort of specialised add-ins, particularly if you've got things like third-party websites, let's say customer relationship management or whatever software that's installing plugins into Outlook, then you can use the 32-bit version. The ultimate performance is only, as Martin points out, only if you've got very large spreadsheets, very large databases, that you really need to think about that. And then planning for link, you need to think about sort of which link client you're going to be using. Are you going to be using the full link client? Are you going to be using the link sort of basic client? Or are you going to be using... for example, mobile devices. If you're using a Windows mobile phone, again, there's a link client for Windows mobile phone. Really, really excellent. Great way of keeping in touch. And then people can't actually tell if you're in the office or not. So very, very useful. Office 365 Pro Plus then. As I've pointed out, Office 365 Pro Plus is really... The main difference from it and Office 2013 Professional Plus is that Office 365 Pro Plus, firstly, it uses Click to Run technology to install, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. And secondly, the fact is that it's per device licensing, subscription based, but per device licensing. There are certain circumstances where you might need to use Office 2013 Professional Plus, and we'll cover those as we go through. The point being about this click to run, I've mentioned this a couple of times now, click to run is this idea of streaming deployment of an application. What it means that if you start an install of Office 365 Pro Plus, you will see the user interface appear within a couple of minutes, isn't it? If you've got a good streaming connection, it'll be there in a couple of minutes. And then everything else is downloaded in the background. And this is compared to an MSI installation, a Microsoft Installer installation, which will typically take, half an hour. And then you've got all the updates to put on as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so whereas with Office 365 Pro Plus, it's always up to date. It always includes the latest updates. They're always streamed through to the client. In terms of the system requirements then, really they're pretty well the same as Office 2013, okay? It's broadly equivalent. I mean, if you buy any computer that's any sort of Windows PC that over the last 3 years, it should be capable of running Office 365 Pro Plus. Internet requirements, it needs to connect to the licensing service at least every 30 days. So if you've got a machine that's totally unconnected to the internet, like you're working in a very high security environment, for example, this might not be suitable for you. You might have to use Office 2013 and install that, or install it from a volume license kit or from other another media. It needs just to reconnect every 30 days to keep itself licensed and activated. So Office on Demand then. So what this is about is, again, this is part of the click-to-run streaming technologies. Office on Demand, it's a localized, virtualized, an application virtualized instance of Office 365 Pro Plus. Runs on the local machine, runs in its own, like a little virtual memory sort of environment, a virtual machine on the local computer. One of the big differences between Office 365, on demand and an installation, a local installation, only comes if you've got, let's say, point of sale system or some CRM software, something that's going to another outside application that's going to call Microsoft Word because it needs to open a .doc or .docx file. If that case, the locally installed application won't see that you've got Word installed because that Word is isolated in its own little environment. So therefore, that's one of the problems where, that's one of the issues where you can get problems, or one of the challenges is that if you've got point of sale software, if you've got sort of CRM line of business software, and it needs to call an external reference to Word, it won't work with this Office on Demand environment. But there's no reason why you couldn't do it with just you could do it with Office 365 Pro Plus. It just isn't going to work with Office on Demand, is it?
Yes.
That's the point, isn't it? It's the virtualization of Office on Demand that does it. It's not part of it's
yes.
Click to Run enables it, but it's actually the way that it installs differently.
Yes, Office on Demand is very isolated. So if anything like an application, you click on a link, for example, to send a mail, those registrations is in the computer available to all the application, but the Office Demand installation doesn't change those settings because it's only a moment in time and it's not available to those applications.
It is separated out. Again, system requirements for Office on Demand, the same as for Office 365 Pro Plus or Office 2013. Now, Office Online, or what was formerly called Office Web Apps, this is a, how can I put it, simplified, wouldn't we say, version of Office, of the full Office suite. It gives you basic editing facilities that you can use pretty well anywhere in the world as long as you have an internet connection. Mm-hmm. So the point here is, with Office Online, you do need to have a connection to the internet to be able to access those documents. Mm. So it's not as feature complete as Office 365 Pro Plus is, but it gives you a pretty good job if you just need to edit a document, you need to add those slides to a presentation before you go into the meeting or something like that. It fully integrates with particularly well with SharePoint. So if you've got documents published on SharePoint, you can just click on the document and edit that document online in your Office Online application. Again, system requirements, it needs to have a supported browser,
yes,
isn't it?
So it uses some of the new features that's available in modern browsers, so Internet Explorer, the new versions of that, Chrome, Firefox, and so on. It uses those technologies to make it available, so you can do inline editing and things like that. So it's pretty powerful.
Indeed. And the point to make is that, again, this is very much Microsoft making this technology available on multiple browsers and platforms. Okay, this is not just about keeping things proprietary to Microsoft operating systems. So therefore, that removes one of the significant deployment objections that is heard quite regularly. So that's Office Online. So what Martin's going to do now is he's going to actually demonstrate these. And what he's going to do, he's going to take SharePoint, he's going to log on to SharePoint, create a document, and then in what is a completely vanilla virtual machine, so there's no Word, no sleight of hand, nothing's been installed previously, okay, nothing up my sleeve or anything like that, he is then going to open those documents in Word, and show us how we can edit using Word online and then the Word on Demand feature.
Okay, so here I have my OneDrive, which is part of SharePoint, and I can then use this to create a new document. So I can choose from any of these templates that's available here. I can create a new Word document, Excel workbook, PowerPoint presentation, OneNote, or Excel survey.
And I think that's interesting that you've got a OneNote notebook, because that's, again, another way that people haven't really thought of notebooks as being a way of working collaboratively, but that's exactly what Office 365 is enabling here.
Mm-hmm. So let's create our Word document, and we give it the name.
Right, so there we go, straight into Word Online.
Yes, and as you can see, this still runs in the browser, but it is very familiar to what people are used to in the normal Word that we have. So I'm going to just create a few sentences.
I thought you were going to write English, though. Of course, yes. Very good. Well, at least Latin.
Yes.
Okay, so there's some sort of random text in there, and so now what can we do with that?
So the beauty of Office Online is I don't have to save it because it's saved automatically. It runs in the browser. There's no save button. I can just go out of that document and save it. So I can download this document and save it to my desktop. Oh, that brings me back to Word, where I can edit it if I want to.
It was the open in Word option that we had in there as well.
I'm going to just download a copy quickly to save it. I just want to quickly show that I don't have Word on this machine. So it is, if I open up this document, it's going to open up in the WordPad. Comes with Windows.
No, absolutely. So again, this is the point that we don't have Word on this machine, and the fact that document was Martin took a local copy and it's been opened in WordPad rather than being opened in full Word, because Word is not installed.
Okay, so from here I can go in and I can use Office on Demand to access a more richer version of Word if I want to. So again, we have all these different versions. You have Excel, PowerPoint, Word, Publisher, and Access. So I'm going to click on Word, and it's going to take a few seconds to pop up.
So again, this all comes down to sort of, if you've got a faster internet connection, this is going to work more effectively. But bingo, we've popped up. There's a dialog box for Word, which we didn't have installed, remember?
Yeah. So this is a full version of Word in a on-demand. So I'm just going to activate this so that I can edit the document.
And why do we need to activate that?
This is so that it can check that I do have a license to use this.
Yeah, absolutely. So it ties into being, a licensed version. So this is something that tends to be available on the premium versions of Office 365. So typically things like your E3, G3, A3 licenses. They're the licenses that include Office 365 Pro Plus also get Office on Demand. And remember that you can license Office 365 Pro Plus as a separate Office 365 service. You don't have to license Exchange Online and all the other bits and bobs.
So I'm just going to connect to my OneDrive again. Why is it? Sign up.
So in terms of our application itself, because it's a licensed service, we need to ensure that we've got that license.
Hmm. What are we getting?
That doesn't have the service. Okay, I'm going to open up my document.
Well, if you had it where you had it open in Office Office Online. Again, there was an option there to open it in Office on Demand. So I think if you go in and edit it there, and then we should be able to see. And then there's that option there for opening Word on the right of the ribbon. There are differences, by the way. Something you need to be able to remember is that that in terms of default save locations and default save behaviours, they are different for the different types of Office Online applications. Again, if you want to look in the service descriptions, you'll see a sort of detail covering exactly what those do. But it's in the way that it saves, whether they auto-save or not, and the default locations to which they save files as well. So do be aware that, again, this is something that does need a little bit of looking at. You need to be able to understand what these applications do and how they work and how they differ. So how are we getting on there?
It's streaming down the requirements.
Right, okay, so here we go.
There.
So here comes our required features again in Word. And remember that this is using click-to-run technology. So it's in the background, it's just loading the sort of shell that it needs to display the application. And again, there's from that actually downloading the content of the document itself as well. Notice that it puts in the URL for the SharePoint site. And very shortly, we should see our document appearing. Okay, so there's Word, and we enable editing, and there it is. Mm-hmm. So that's now our full document, and we can Martin can edit that and make changes, and you know, we can view it, we can do review, we can do all of those other features that are fully available with Word, with a fully licensed version of Word. The only thing we can't do is that external applications can't tie into this because they don't actually see it. It doesn't leave a registry footprint. It's all running in a virtual environment. Okay, so that's Office On Demand and Office Online. Thank you for that, Martin. So let's talk about some sort of licensing and activation requirements. So in terms of user requirements, you need to have a user license for Office 365, like an E-plan, E3 plan rather, or the equivalent academic or governmental plan. You need to be licensed for Office. Within that plan, you need to have an Office license, or you need to have the standalone Office 365 Pro Plus plan. The licensing process, what actually runs on the client is that it installs a client service, and that client service is what then uses those credentials to go out and check every 30 days, and it revalidates itself, reauthenticates itself that license still exists for that user. If you take the user's license away, or if they don't connect to the internet for 30 days, then Word goes into its reduced functionality mode. What you can do there, you can still print stuff, but you can't actually create any new documents. So it's a slightly different reduced functionality mode than most people might expect. Mm. Because you can still do stuff with that document, but you can't then create a new one, or you can't, you know, so and so on. In terms of an overview of deploying Office 365, so you need to think about bandwidth planning, because this is quite a, you know, that there is, it isn't a vast sort of amorphic lump like an MSI file that you need to install. It is a streaming service, and you can stream it, download it locally, and stream it from a local share as well. You don't have to be streaming it direct from the Office 365 site. You don't necessarily need to remove previous versions. You can run it alongside existing versions. But what's important that you communicate with your users and explain them to what's going on and the differences and the additional features in Office 365 Pro Plus. Talked about the deployment methods. Again, if you've got it, click-to-run technology is compatible with something like System Center Configuration Manager and with other deployment techniques as well. And there are advantages in terms of the fact that it isn't, you know, bringing down huge MSI files. I've sort of described what the technology does anyway, but this idea that it just brings up a stub and then starts downloading everything else in the background. So the user is able to work with all the features. If the user selects a feature that has not yet been downloaded, then that feature is then prioritized above all the rest so that the user can actually use it. But after half an hour, it's all done anyway. It's all been installed. There are some limitations with click-to-run technologies because it's to do a lot with licensing. Because Office 365 Pro Plus is basically tied into a single user account, you can't use it with remote desktop sharing environments, multi-tenant, multi-user desktop sharing environments. You can only use it with remote desktop if that desktop is only available to one user. So some best practices then. Yep, lots of planning needed. You do need to think about this. It is more than just a new version of Office. It's a new technology. It's a new approach to working. Users need to be made aware of how that works. You may need to have some consultancy support if software deployment isn't particularly familiar for you. Think about the installation and uninstallation process. What are you going to do with the previous version of Office 365? End-user training, absolutely vital with what we're covering here. And then, of course, your help desk staff as well, because they're the people who are going to be helping your end-users, and they need to know what's going on as well.
So even if you can run multiple versions of Office on the same machine, you have to be aware of some of the things that it can cause, because of the example that you mentioned earlier, you can, when you install Office 365 Pro Plus on a machine, and you have an old version of Office 2010, and an external application wants to open up a document.
Yes.
Which one will it choose?
Absolutely, yes.
So those are the kind of things that a consultant need to think about when you deploy this, because you may have some unintended consequences if you don't do it right. So it's really important that you train the end users what's going to happen if you go down that path, or also that you plan to do the right thing and you make sure that you have the right consequences.
Yes, indeed. So it's not entirely straightforward, but what you'll get out of it is a much more fully featured version of Office, and really something that's going to be, you know, this is really the way that things are going. You know, Office 365 Pro Plus is going to become the premium version of Office, and we're going to, and it's with all this sort of streaming technologies and automatic updating and so on. What we'll talk about now is what happens with these client user-driven client deployments. So we'll talk about, we'll sort of introduce those, discuss some of the management issues and the various considerations, and finish off with some best practices. So with a user-driven deployment, what we're doing is we're talking about always streaming the user installation location is actually from the internet. Martin, if you want to just pull up on the Office 365 website, where we'll just go across there in a moment, just while he's getting ready for that. What we're going to look at is I'll show you where Office 365 is deployed from, and some of the controls that you can set. So in order to download it, the user has to have an Office 365 account, and they do need to be provisioned for Office 365 Pro Plus, I say either as a standalone or as part of a suite. They also have to have administrative rights to the local computer. For some people, some organizations, that can be a deal breaker for this installation method. However, user-driven deployments do tend to be things like associates. In Content Master, we work with a lot of associates, and they bring their own computers, they are administrators on their own computers. They can go to the website and download and install Office 365 from home. We don't need to manage that for them. They do it, and they have administrative rights. Once you've installed it, then Office 365 Pro Plus will keep itself up to date. It will stream updates down from Office 365, so therefore there's no sort of Patch Tuesday involvement. It's all done automatically for you. Anyway, Martin, if you'd like to sort of show us where we install this from.
So for Office 365, because I'm logged in as an administrator, I also have all these admin commands. But when you click on the user, you can click on the user settings here, and you go to Office 365 settings, and that's for that specific user. If you go there, there's some normal fields that the user himself can change, and then you can go to software, and this is where you can install Office 365 Pro Plus, and it will contain all of these programs as part of the installation.
Just want to show us then, remember we've been talking about 32-bit, 64-bit, you'd just like to show us where the version,
yes,
where you can get to the additional version there.
So if you want to change that, you can click on that advanced link there, and you can change it to 64-bit, and when you then do the installation, it will stream the 64-bit version down to your machine.
Indeed. And if you could also show us because there's some sort of administrative settings. This is just a reminder, that's what the user can see.
Mm-hmm.
So the user can see there. So that's where a user-based install is driven from. If you'd just like to show us in the Office 365 admin console, what we've got here is, if we go into the service settings, then we should be able to see the software. Again, we've got user software there. And here, this is where you, as the administrator, can control what can be downloaded, what they can download, whether they can download Office and Link and SharePoint Designer.
Yep.
Okay.
And you can configure all sorts of settings.
The Office deployment tool we're going to talk about in the next module. So in terms of controlling the applications themselves, we can do that through app locker policies. So because this is effectively an app locker aware application, then we can control that through AppLocker, and also we can also control it through application virtualization, because that's the technology behind Click to Run is AppV. So again, we can use that as a control process for our Office 365 Pro Plus deployments. In terms of considerations, you need to think about what obstacles. Well, again, user training is a significant obstacle. For some users, even getting onto the Office 365 website and navigating themselves to the download point can be a significant blocker to success. So they do need to know what they're doing, where they need to go to find it, and actually what they're doing. And remember, of course, they do need to have administrative rights to do this type of install. In terms of mobile devices, again, there's a variety of levels of support. You're probably aware that that Office for Mac is supported as an Office client. There's this new Office for iPad, so that's going to please my daughter very much, because she'll now be able to do her presentations on her iPad, her PowerPoint presentations on her iPad, and not on Daddy's boring laptop. So, and there's different levels of support for other mobile devices as well. But again, if you have a bring your own device policy, make sure that you've got the right level of support, or that you know how to mitigate that and provide the users with the experience that they want. In terms of best practices then, communication, absolutely key to make sure users understand what's going on, and they know that this is a new version of Office, and they'll need to know what the new features are and how it can help them. Lots of planning, really, really important. Can't emphasize this enough. So that's why we wrote it three times. You need to think about what platforms. I've already mentioned about platforms and devices, things like iPads and Macs and so on. Make sure that those are supported devices. Who's going to get it, when they're going to get it, how are they going to get it, and, of course, making sure that they have administrative control on their local machines. And then, finally, a training plan. Again, another vitally important point. Anything to do with end users on Office 365, and you must have a decent training plan in place.
Yes, if you upgraded from Office 2003, you might not be familiar with the ribbon that was introduced in Office 2007 and improved in every version, and that could be a big change to a customer. So training is very important, that they understand how it works and how to use Office.
Indeed, and there are quite a few sort of common features which seem to have been moved into other places, like doing things like comparing documents and other stuff like that, you know. So it's, again, as Martin particularly says, if it's a 2003 migration to 2013, that is, you know, a major update of, some major updates have gone on since then, and they will need to have that end user training. So in terms of your IT deployment, what if we've got, you know, if you're a fully managed shop and you've got a IT deployment tool in place, you've got something like System Center Configuration Manager or another equivalent third-party product, and you're using that to deploy Office 365. So here, what we need to do there, we'll talk about our various sort of options and managing updates and so on, but particularly we're going to talk about this Office deployment tool, which we touched on very briefly. So what we do with Office 365 in a managed deployment is that we use one of these tools to download, and we download the software typically either as a package or to a share, and then we configure the deployment options and then roll that out to our users. So, I've mentioned System Center Configuration Manager. Let's not forget Windows Intune, of course. What's been your sort of experience so far with Windows Intune?
So, yes, Windows Intune is the cloud version of System Center, and that allows you to also deploy software to PCs and manage them and make sure that they're always up to date and so on from a cloud point of view, because you may have a company that's loosely based and you want to make sure that all your clients are up to date. Their antivirus policy might be out of date, and you need to make sure that they run the latest virus signatures and so on. So Intune can facilitate all of those things.
Absolutely. And of course, Intune makes an excellent sort of service to run alongside Office 365, and certainly makes a great deal of sense to do that. And of course, Intune has got a lot of the features. You know, as your Active Directory, it's in the background of Intune. So I think we're going to see over future greater sort of integration between Intune and Office 365. There are other things you can do. You can use group policy scripts. You can use group policy login scripts within Active Directory. You can script the installation. Typically, then, when we're doing this type of installation, the end user does not require administrative rights on their local machines. Those administrative rights are done through some sort of form of elevation of privileges when the installation takes place. The Office deployment tool itself, Office deployment tool is actually a very small install. It's only a meg or so. And what you end up with is a configuration XML file, and you use that configuration XML file to set the location for downloads and updates. And here's an example of that configuration file there. So we've got a source path, we've got a product ID, which is the Office 365 Pro Plus Retail. We're specifying what language we're using, and also we've got an additional option here. We're also installing Visio Pro Retail as well. We've got updates are enabled, and it's pointing to a particular update path that you can see there. Display level none and accept EULA true. Well, of course, that's a silent install. So this one's going to run in the background, and the user won't even know it until, whoop, and suddenly they've got these new icons on their desktop, and Office 365 Pro Plus is ready to run. And then if we want any extra logging and so on, and automatically activate the user. So those are the settings that you would configure in your Office deployment tool, and away you go and run that, and then that's where it'll point from for its deployment and for its updates as well. So if we use group policies, we've got policies. There are various administrative templates that we can install to implement group policy settings for Office 365 Pro Plus deployment. Some of those are Office general office settings that you set, and some of those are for the application. Remember that you'll be doing that through Group Policy Editor, and then you change your settings. You can change things like, you know, the location of your of where the files are coming from, also which features are being enabled, and so on. So there's a whole raft of settings that you can configure in Group Policy to enable those managed deployments. In terms of managing the updates, now I've already mentioned about this software update process is that it's from a central. You can either do it centrally from a share, or you can update it from the Office 365 website. What it tends to do is that it tends to sort of like be little packets of updates rather than replacing the whole environment. So we can automatically update from the cloud, or we can automatically update from the network. Or what you can do is you can actually run the setup tool, and then run that setup again. If, for example, let's say you needed to change the location of your configuration, you want to point the configuration file to another share, let's say, in order to get those updates from those. It's still the same configuration XML file that's used, but it's simply you can just rerun that and point it to a different location. So in terms of your considerations then, remember that your users, they don't require admin rights for an IT-based deployment. Think about, though, bandwidth. Bandwidth's very important because the size of... It's not so much that it's one big package that we're downloading like you might do with a traditional installer. It's still a streamed package, but it's still got to stream that information over a set amount of time. So think about doing this at quiet times, you know, night times, evenings, or at the weekends. Licenses need to be set correctly. If you're not a licensed user, then they're not going to be able to run the application. Windows XP issues. If you've still got Windows XP out there, then, obviously try and get off it. There are significant compatibility issues between Office 2013 and XP. You know, really, this is moving on to the next generation of software. If you haven't got experience with enterprise software deployment packages or enterprise deployment technologies, again, you've got to make an assessment. Are you going to use some form of ESD, like System Center Configuration Manager? Or why don't you just look at Windows Intune? You know, Windows Intune could do everything you need to do it without having to set up that complexity of setting up System Center Configuration Manager. Okay. So to finish off with some best practices then, planning, yep, lots of that. User education, design and test. Make sure that you do test this environment, that you know what's going to happen when you implement Office 365. Again, a good awareness program. You need to make people aware of what's happening. You need to make sure that they really appreciate the differences between what they've used previously, particularly if they're coming from Office 2003. And that all ties in to your proper training plan.
Nice thing that I've seen, Anthony, that some customers do with a customized deployment like this using managed deployments, is they set up two different shares and they point some of their pilot users to the share that updates the pilot users. You can see that updates are running, it's working fine. And then you update your other share for the rest of the users and they point to that share to get the other updates. So if you're one of those companies that really want to try updates first in an isolated environment, that's the way you would do it. You would just set up two different shares and point some users to the one and the rest of the users to the other share.
Indeed. That's a very good point. And again, that allows you to, you can apply different customizations and again use group policies for different users. You could have one group policy for one set for your pilot user and another group policy for your main users.
Yep.
Super. So thank you for that. Okay. So to finish off then, let's talk about a little bit about Office Telemetry. Now, Office Telemetry may be something that you've not really sort of worked with before. We're really just going to give you an overview of what it is because, again, it's another quite complex environment. What it does is it allows us to measure, telemetry, measure what's happening with Office. Who's using it? Or what are they using it for? So this is a way of answering those management awkward management questions like, what value do we get back from using Microsoft Office? How many people are using it? How many people are using different versions of Office? What are they doing with it? How long do they spend editing documents? You know, it's also sort of some sort of workflow measurement as well and productivity measurement going on here. So I'll talk about the installation and configuring of telemetry, how you might use that telemetry data, some further considerations, and again, we'll round off with some best practices. I'd be interested to know, actually, Martin, how much experience have you had with telemetry?
So, yeah, I'm one of the lucky few that have deployed telemetry in an environment, and it's really one of those insightful tools to make sure that you know what's going on and what versions of people running. Are there still Outlook 2007 clients out there that hasn't been updated or stuff like that? So it really gives you good insight into your environment.
Excellent. And I mean, were you producing sort of management reports to do that?
Yes. So it all boils up into the telemetry dashboard that gives you all of that information that you can give to your executives and say, well, people are still using old versions of Office, or people are using a specific add-in or something like that, or everybody is opening up a certain file and so on.
Okay. Excellent. Good. So telemetry then, as Martin points out, it's a way of measuring and finding out what people are using Office for. What do they do with it? You know, what time of the day are they working with documents? It's an agent-based operation. So what is the agent, which is installed automatically with Office 365 Pro Plus. It gathers information on the user's usage of Office documents and then sends it back to a central collation server and database. In terms of its management, Martin points out, it's done through Office Telemetry. It's really a spreadsheet, although there is an Office, there is also a telemetry administration console as well, which is a separate download to sort of carry out sort of configuration and additional management operations. So it's giving us plenty of information about Office usage, and as I said, it answers that question, what value do we get out of our Office license, you know, our Office licenses? What value are we getting back as an organization? And again, it can be extremely important to be able to answer that convincingly. In terms of the steps that we need to carry out, what we'll do, you start off by preparing a database, and it's SQL Server again, isn't it?
Yes, so SQL Server is used here in the background. It's a small version of SQL Server.
So it's a SQL Server Express that we're talking about here, aren't we? Yes. Yeah, there's lots of SQL Server databases in this course that we'll be covering, but this is one of them. So then we set up the processor, and again, that's done by installing the agent. There's the processor part that we do on a server. I mean, I say a server, it's just like a workstation, isn't it?
Yeah, you can use a workstation to run the telemetry engine on, but there's some limitations to that if you want to do that. So that's something that you need to plan as well.
And you could run it in a virtualized machine as well, in a virtual machine, couldn't
you? Yes, you can run it in a virtual machine as well.
So you've got lots of sort of options in terms of your deployment there. So then deploy the agents and say that's deployed automatically as part of Office 365 Pro Plus. There is an additional agent for Office 2010. And then you configure those and make sure that by using the group policy admin settings that they're reporting back to the telemetry server, and then that information is put into the database. So it all runs on a schedule, so it's typically a sort of an 8-hour schedule. So every 8 hours, the clients will report back their data back to the Office server. So once you've got it connected in, there's one more setting about privacy, isn't there? How's that going to help us?
So if you're worried about users, maybe they don't want you to expose file names and things like that. You can obfuscate those names so that it only shows a small part of the name so that you have some way of tracking it, but it doesn't show the whole path and the whole file name in the reporting.
Yeah, it's a bit like showing, you know, all but the final four digits of your credit card number or something like that. So it just removes part of the file name. So yeah, so we do have some privacy settings as well. You know, it isn't a question of, oh right, I'll be able to find out exactly what document everybody's been opening. You know, you can configure those privacy settings and apply those as well. Again, that's through the Office through the telemetry administration tool. So what you then do is you end up with a spreadsheet load of data, and what you can do is you can collate that, create reports from it, you put it into management information systems, because it's just spreadsheets of data. So you can do all sorts of stuff like that. You can configure multiple viewer access as well, so it doesn't just be one user at a time. Multiple viewers can see it at the same time. And then you can also go in and remove and sanitize data as required, on a schedule, so that you can clear down your database. In terms of scalability, there are some considerations. I mean, we're talking, you know, well, I mean, I've seen figures, 45,000 clients? I mean, big company. 10 gig of data in an 8-hour period?
Yeah, so it really depends on how much people use Office in the environment. So if there's a lot of people in your environment, they use Office all the time, that is what they do, you're obviously going to generate a lot more logging.
So we're talking about, 64K a record or something like that?
Yeah, yes. It's really small records that is uploaded
records
to the...
Pretty efficient on the record sizes, but it does depend, as Martin says, on how many times we actually use those records. So things to think about. Permissions, not surprisingly, in terms of access to, you know, database access and so on, making sure that you've got your infrastructure already set up, that you've got a machine that's scaled right for the amount of information that you're going to be getting in, and of course make sure that if you're putting, say, the SQL database on the same machine, that there's enough disk space to run that, making sure that you can connect in to the clients can connect and can resolve through to the client, to the machine that's actually running the telemetry database. And again, you would set up that through your group policies. But again, you should test that to make sure that the clients can access the database. What to happen about stuff like unreported and missing data? Have you got any sort of from stuff that, have you seen any sort of examples of missing data, unreported data in?
Actually, I haven't. So maybe I'm one of the lucky ones where, you know, there's obviously a lot of things that can go wrong when you set this up. You may make a spelling mistake in a share and so on, that it's not uploaded to the share where all this stuff is collated to the dashboard. So there's a bunch of things that can go wrong.
I think probably the point that most people don't appreciate is the fact that it's an 8-hour schedule, and they install Office 365, you know, Office telemetry, and then it's running, and 4 hours later they still haven't got any data. Well, that's because you probably haven't reached it's 8 hours plus a random offset. So, and then it's every 8 hours afterwards. So if you haven't reached the 8 hours plus your random offset, then you're not going to see any data. So I think this is unreported data and missing data. The fact is, just wait, it should turn up. If it hasn't turned up, then check things like your name resolution. Check that you can actually connect from your clients into the telemetry database.
And if you're really in a hurry, there's some registry settings that you can tweak.
You can force it. You can force it to happen. So think again about your performance capacity planning. Think about the effects on your network. Usually, it will tend to take up spare capacity. You know, this isn't something that's really going to flood your network unless you've got sort of tens of thousands of clients, when you might get significant network capacity. But if you're on gigabit infrastructure anyway, I mean, it's, you know, should be neither here nor there, really. Okay, so some best practices then. So think about how you're going to design. Think, well, what are you going to do with all this information? I mean, it's one thing to have, you know, a whole bunch of information, but unless you're actually going to employ it in an effective way. So think about, how are you going to use this information to prepare management reports, and how are you going to, what's the best way to describe this information and to report that up through your hierarchy. Do think about your capacities. Do think about sizing your SQL database to make sure that it's large enough, that you've got enough expansion room to be able to to cope with the growth in the database. There are people who you can consult who do have experience of using Office Telemetry. Obviously, Martin's one of those. But they can help you in the rollout of the telemetry system. And it really is, it's quite a lot of additional information we're talking about here, aren't we? So it's quite a powerful system. And then don't forget, pilot it, test it, make sure it's all running properly, and away you should go. And so it's all built into Office 365 Pro Plus and to Office 2013, the agent itself. Okay. So we're going to finish that module then. So hopefully you've now got a good idea of how to plan for your Office 365 clients. We've looked at how you can manage these user-driven client deployments. And that includes things like users who are administrators installing for themselves. If you don't go for that, then you can have an IT-managed deployment. And that doesn't require administrative rights. And then we finished off with some telemetry and reporting. After this, we're right on to Exchange and DNS, part one.